Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Absolute Rally, Season 15, Episode 3. Normally there's three, there's been sometimes even just two, but at the moment they're all on the little holidays. The boys will be up a little bit later on the podcast, but I thought it's not very often we get a chance to do this. We're going to open with a winner. From Rally Monte Carlo. We did want to have him last week, but Gus Greensmith was a busy boy elsewhere. Of course, we had Christian Solberg talking to us about the work he'd done, but I thought we'd get our man in WRC2 back. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Gus Greensmith.
Thank you. It's been a while.
It's been too long, but you had a little bit of downtime. We've just been discussing downtime before we started this. Now, which prompts me to my first question. Apart from the fact that first, let's start with the simple congratulations on winning Monte Carlo, which is a hell of a statement.
Thank you. It sounds good when people say Rally Monte Carlo winner. I'm not like, it's not lost its edge yet.
No, I'll be honest with you, mate. It won't. I can only imagine it won't. But your season finished last year, end of October, I think you said, wasn't it? And
yeah.
You then had a couple of months kind of downtime. Did that contribute, do you think, to going into this season rather than going straight off the back of a rally straight into Tesla straight? Do you think that had anything to do with the result? I know hindsight's a wonderful thing and it's easy to say yes, but do you think that that particular performance?
No, I would say it was still more of a detriment because you can't beat anything other than cold seat time, as you call it. It keeps your seat sharp, keeps you performing well. So, being out of the car for that long was a detriment, but obviously, signing with M Sport Ford for this year in the WRC2 Pro and WRC car, it gave me access to some testing for the new car. So I've been able to keep more seat sharp than last year, which did help. Although no tarmac, it did help for Monte Carlo.
Now you had a new co-driver for this year, or rather a new old co-driver in Elliott. Now, you've worked with Elliott before, but albeit that was in an R2 car and that was a couple of years ago. Now, you've both gone in separate directions, but both equally progressed. How easy was the transition? Was it for you guys to come back together?
It was very easy, to be honest. In 2015, we were just both too young. We needed more experience to work properly if you wanted to learn together. We've had a couple of years away. He's done his own thing. I've done my own thing. And we've come back, and now it feels like it's a really great combination. Obviously, the first I'd heard about Elliott's development was through Elvin, because Elliott had done quite a lot of Elvin's pre-event tests for rallies. Elvin always was very positive about Elliott. So that was kind of when it first came about. And then we did, I think, a total of about 5 test days. Just general development testing over the winter before we got to Monte Carlo, and it just clicked perfectly. He's got a very I would call it a very special gift with getting information out at the right time. So yeah, it works really well, and the result proves it.
You were blessed as well, of course, to have the team of people around you. And I know you're very, very big on this. And the fact that, lump in the throat moment, by the way, when you dedicated the win on Monte Carlo to Craig, it was one of those moments where you went, I think I've got something in my eye there. Now, obviously, Craig was there doing ice notes for you. That undoubtedly also helps the fact that I'm sure he's working with Elliott as well, behind the scenes, as well as on events like that.
Yeah, well, Craig was obviously the man that, to me, brought me on massively, along with Christian. He developed my pace notes to be consistent to a point now where I would call them very good. I can write a set of fresh pace notes and trust them 100% when I get to the rally. So in two years, that I would say that was very important for my career. And Craig, well, I know how much effort Craig put into making us winners. So it seemed completely wrong not to thank the man that I would attribute with the win. So yeah, he was a massive point, and he still works with Elliott now behind the scenes, and he still obviously works with me behind the scenes, because he's still got a lot to teach me and I've still got a lot to learn.
Listen, good on you for acknowledging it, but I just think it was just such a nice thing to acknowledge. People are easily forgotten. Okay, Ayn's a mate of mine, and obviously we're supporting him with his new venture, of course, but on the podcast as well, so you can hear all about what, you know, we're running stings and stuff, what he's doing with Killian. But I think there was something nice to hear him mentioned in that vein as well. But also, I suppose having him there and having Antoine there, of course, Antoine Lesage, who's highly experienced man on ice and snow. In fact, he's out on Piers Nage over in the Canadian Rally Championship this coming weekend. But having experience there, also having Christian doing weather crew, it's a hell of a team of people you've got there now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the right team now. Christian's he's very good to know. He knows a lot of people. He has a lot of experience to pass on to me. Antoine, I think he's been brilliant on the ice notes. There was very, very few things that... I think there was one thing the entire weekend where it had changed over since he'd been there, where I would have marked it differently. He did a brilliant job. So the team I have around me is massively important. And then there's also the guy with the great beard who keeps me very planted, so I don't run away with myself for an ego or get myself a big ego.
Yeah, and that's the old man.
Yeah, that's the old man.
Now, we mentioned before we started recording, I think there's several drivers that M Sport could kind of use as poster boys. Okay. And I believe Craig Breen could have been one of them because he came up through the Fiesta STs and he won in the Super 2000. Elvin, of course, goes without saying, won in the ST, won in the R2, he's won in R5, and obviously he's won in the World Car. And now we've got the next generation almost, which I believe is you. I believe you're the next generation. And the reason why I'm putting you in that kind of category is because I remember you in the Fiesta R1 car. And I remember you not wanting to be in the Fiesta R1 car, and a certain Andrew Wheatley from M Sport insisting this is the right way for you to go. You go R1, you go R2, and here we are now winning an R5. Do you think he was right, Gus?
It's that story will be one of the stories that that I will repeat for the rest of my life. Yeah. No, it was one of them things that was just absolutely the right thing to do, a step at a time. Because in my karting career, I was always chucked in at the deep end, and it always felt like I had so much to learn in such a little amount of time. I was young at the time. I was, 22 now, so I feel a bit older, but young at the time, just turning 17. It was right just to space it out, take it step by step, and especially with the development of my driving, it played a very big part.
Do you know what? I wanted to ask you about a car. You know, karting, you know, was a big part of your life before you moved into rally. And I've got several friends who've had sons who've gone through that particular route as well. And it's brutal. You know, we all know rallying is brutal, but karting is brutal. And I hear horrible stories of kids being chewed up and spat out in karting. And, you know, if I'm speaking out of turn to people in karting who are listening, please put me straight. But I hear more negative stories than I do positive stories. Did you learn important lessons, you think, way back then that are serving you well now?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the only way as a driver, no matter what discipline you go into, sports cars, rallying or single seaters, you should always start with karting. It teaches you the basics of car control and many other aspects as well. And yes, I would say it's a very toxic environment. There's certain things that I saw in there which I would wish on no child, and certainly that would never happen to my children. But unfortunately, few people at least have good parents like minded who didn't put the pressure on me, who wanted me to do it because I enjoyed it, not because they wanted me to be the next Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian Loeb or whatever. The whole point of doing a sport is to enjoy it. And for me, if you enjoy something, you tend to do pretty goddamn well at it.
Absolutely. Can you remember the moment, because you obviously got to quite a high standard, you know, British Championship and things like that in karting. Can you remember the moment where you made that decision where you think perhaps karting wasn't going to be your future?
It was before I actually started karting, where I knew I would not be doing karting or single seaters or sports cars in my career. It was 2008 January, and I was watching Sebastian Loeb come down an icy Monte Carlo or Gap Hill, and it mesmerized me. And from that point onwards, I knew that I had to learn my craft through karting before it was time to get in a rally car and then develop to the point where I would get to Monte Carlo. But at the time in 2008, I had a big dream that I would win Monte Carlo. And 11 years later, look where we are.
Not a bad effort, that, really, mate, is it? Not a bad effort. But
no, not too bad.
So was karting for you a means to an end? I don't know too much about the results. I know you got to a good standard, but I don't know about championships and stuff like that. I'm not up on it. Ironically, I'm probably going to have to learn about it in about 5 or 6 years time, but I'll be coming to you for advice on that. Don't worry. When my little boy gets there. But, did you kind of have this attitude then that again, you mentioned seat time at the top of this, where we were talking about time. Was it not maybe championships and stuff you were going for, or was it more to do with, I'm just going to get as much seat time as I can, because the next move for me, I'm going to be in a rally car anyway. This is just purely testing for me.
No, I'm way too competitive just to go testing.
I knew you were going to say that, but I had to ask.
Yeah, we started in the British Championship. We moved to the European Championship, and then my last year in karting, we did the World Championship. We would always be very strong in qualifying. We out-qualified quite a few drivers that people would know of today, people like Charles Leclerc and people like that, but my racecraft just wasn't there. So thankfully, I picked rallying before I even started karting. So yeah, I knew it would just be the point of where I practiced until the point I turned 17, and then I could start my new path of my career in rallying.
Now, something else which I think that there's a lot to be said for, and I think M Sport are very good at this as well. That, you know, you've spent a week. We won't pry too much. You've just been testing with M Sport, and as you just said, you're 22 years old. You've just won Rally Monte Carlo. You've had unfortunately, you didn't do as much as what you were planning on doing this week. But you've been testing now. That is a skill and an education within itself, because of course you're going out and you're going back to talk to an engineer and you're feeding back information. How has that been for you, Gus? Because that's not an easy thing to do. Not many people can transfer information back to an engineer. How do you find that kind of dynamic?
To be, without blowing my own trumpet, I have always thought that one of my strongest attributes was my ability to feel the relationship between the car and the surface and understand what the car is doing. And then it is helpful, but I don't necessarily believe that you need to know everything about why the car is doing this, but you need to be able to relay it back to the engineers who look through the data. So for me, I think that was half of the reason why I was asked to do it. Obviously, the seat time is massively important, and that's one thing that we just didn't have compared to the Skodas last year. It was one day, if any days, of testing before each event. So it makes a big difference to me, the seat time, and I'm trying to give the best feedback I can give to the engineers for this new car, because when it comes out at some point in the summer, I want to get in that car and I want to go and do what I did in Monte Carlo, but a bit better.
Yeah. But again, you know, I think that ability to be able to speak to an engineer, you know, people don't realize how much goes on behind the scenes in rallying and how much work goes in, you know, about banging out kilometers as well, you know, and it's hard. It is hard when somebody says to you, right, it's the same piece of road. We want you to go and do 100 Ks on the same piece of road to keep concentrated and keep not doing stupid things just to keep yourself interested, which, by the way, I've got a reputation for doing stupid things on tests just because I get bored. Doing the same piece of road, and there's footage of me going off before track rod last year, which goes to prove it. But anyway, that's a different conversation. But there's a lot to be said for that mental kind of going to work. Right, I'm going to work, and I've got so many Ks I've got to do, and I'm just going to feed that information back. How do you prepare for that? Obviously, you're very fit now, but mental fatigue and tiredness of doing the same piece of road, pounding out kilometers day after day after day. How do you prepare for that?
I just make sure I get my 6 hours of sleep. And if we did 100 kilometers of testing, I think everyone, all of the engineers, would be very disappointed. I think 300's or more, a more what they would call a positive total mileage for the day. But I don't find it difficult, because it's the best job in the world. That's what I'm doing. If you stop enjoying this, there's zero point in doing it. And yeah, some people will say testing's boring. Yes, it is, but you've got all this testing and this fantastic car and all the access to all the resources of a team like M Sport Ford, and you're just going to sit around and say that you're bored of testing or you're a bit tired. No, you need to make the most of it. You need to make the most of everything. And every time you go out, maybe just try something different with your driving, even if you might know it not works. You might find something else about the car. I always on test try and take the car in places where I know I have room for error. I will try and take the car well above its limits to see exactly how far I can push it. So when the day does come that I need to go to give it absolutely everything, risk absolutely everything, then I know the car better than anyone else and I feel like I can do it.
I've got to ask you about a test that you did before Christmas, Gus.
Go on.
The low-flying aircraft that we call 2017 World Rally Cars.
Yeah.
I've got to ask. Talk us through it. Come on.
You can't swear on the radio, I assume.
You can, though. You can swear on this program. It's okay. It's fine.
Oh, yes. Fuck me, that thing was so fast. I've never been shocked driving the car. And I didn't even have the ALS on, and I just started warming up the tyres, and I thought, oh, yeah, this is pretty quick. This is pretty quick. And it took me about, I don't know, six runs or so just to start to understand how the car works and how the differential and exactly how much further you could push the car with its suspension. Once that started to click, man, it's just phenomenal. And yeah, I would like to say that I'd be able to do like 2-3 days testing for Portugal, and unfortunately I'm not going, and I'm not complaining. As long as I've got a day's test, I can make something work. But yeah, there's so many things to try and learn with that car that you can't do in one day. So I'll just give it everything. I'll just drive as fast as I can and see what happens in Portugal. That's the only plan I've got and the only plan I'm going to have.
This, obviously, I mentioned the kind of the ladder that you've gone through before. Obviously, you've gone from the most basic up to the highest, you know, level Fiesta I think they'll probably ever be now. Does things like aero even come in? Are you even feeling that, or does that even come in? You know, it's because the big thing that's being made about these cars is downforce, downforce, downforce. Do you even feel that? Does that even come into your mindset, or is it just the fact the car just handles and you just get on with it?
The majority of the road I tested on in terms of Greystoke, which is quite a fast place, was the corners were quite low speed. There was one, what I would call quite high speed corner. And yes, you can just start to feel the car being just pushed down into the ground a little bit more, especially when you go over 70 miles an hour. That's when you can start to feel the aerodynamics work. And I'm hoping that on the my pre-event test road for Rally Portugal, we'll have a couple of fast corners, because yes, I've tested some single seaters, but it's still something that I need to learn again and adapt to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, again, the social media was just the image of just the plain white test car, and you stood there. It was like, yeah, boy's done good. Boy's done good. That's one of those time capsule moments where I think whether you've got an album yet, I don't think people have photo albums anymore. They do everything on Facebook or whatever it may be. But I still like a photo album. I still think you should have print off some of these pictures, put them on an album, put it away, and almost time capsule it. And in 25, 30 years' time, just get it back out and revisit it. Honestly.
Yeah. Well, that very picture is still my wallpaper.
Yeah. Oh, it's mega. It's mega.
Just to remind me, just if not that I needed any more motivation, but just if I ever need that little bit more, just to remind me of what I'm going to be doing in Portugal and possibly a few more.
Yeah. So anyway, next up for you, is Sweden.
Yep. Something where I don't have the experience, but it's been a while since I've been there, and the first time went reasonably okay. So it's going to be, we know it'll be hard to be right at the very front. It's not, certainly not unrealistic, and it's certainly what I'll be aiming and trying for. But obviously it's an event with a lot of what you would call young talent and certainly a lot of drivers. So I have a feeling that the attrition rate is going to be incredibly high. So yeah, pushing like hell and being clever is the only way to go for Sweden.
I think I said this on last week's podcast, actually. I think there's an element of Monty and Sweden being back to back, almost similar kind of similar jeopardies, and almost for getting it wrong. They are such they're such lottery events to some degree. And I suppose it's the ice that brings that lottery in.
Yeah, it's a tricky event. And it's, you find things like the tracks in the ice where your car just goes on skates and just won't stop. So there's, I'm talking from a driver with very little experience of full snow rallying, but there's certainly a lot of things that play a part in the snow banks and anticipating exactly how much of actual direction of lock you need for when you hit them. There's a lot to learn and anticipate for Rally Sweden. So it's a tricky event, but it's I don't see any reason why we can't go there and be very fast.
Good man. Looking at WRC2, obviously WRC2 Pro, it's still an interesting time with that, because obviously people can register at any given point, can't they, for Pro at the moment? So there's only a few registered, but anybody can dip in and dip out whenever they want, really, with Pro. But there was still, obviously, WRC2 runners in Monte Carlo. As you mentioned, there's going to be plenty in Sweden. The plan for this year, Gus, is to win the championship, I'm sure. I'm not even going to ask that question. I'm not even going to waste my breath asking you that. But do you even look at who you're up against? Do you even get sucked into? Because the big thing everybody obviously has gone on about, and quite rightly to some degree at times, of course, is the Cali Rovanperä effect. You know, there was people banging on for him to be in a world car this year after doing, 18 months in an R5 car. Do you even look at these guys? Do you allow yourself a cursory glance, or do you just still do Gus's thing and what Gus does Gus is good enough?
To be fair, in Monaco, my mirrors weren't working very well, so I didn't really get to look behind me. I was kind of just looking forward. You can't not appreciate the quality of drivers that I'm up against. These are all a lot of these drivers you're going to see in WRC. That's for sure. We know that. But there's drivers where I'm driving against Mads Osberg in Sweden. So he's finished on the podium in Sweden many times in a world rally car. So I think he's a very good, a very good kind of
benchmark.
Yeah, benchmark to see where we're at in terms of Sweden. So I think whenever I'm doing WRC2, the only thing I'm interested in is really kind of the overall. I was never going to let Bonato win in Monaco. I wouldn't finish second and consolidate the winning points in WRC2 Pro and then have to live with the fact that I finished second again. It was only going to be first. Now, I'm sure at some point in the season when the maths and the championship starts playing a point, there might be a point where we have to be smart and let go of our egos. But for now, that doesn't seem like the right thing to do.
Can I ask you about, you've just mentioned Mads there. Obviously, he's coming in with the S3 R5. He's doing Pro. Does that, I wasn't sure about that because I don't think it's kind of in the spirit of what WRC2 is about. What were your thoughts? Because I suppose you could look at it the other way, and as you say, you can use them as a benchmark and go, well, if you beat Mads, then fair play. But for me, I don't feel he should be there. I think we should have this ruck of young drivers in WRC2 finding their way through to WRC seats.
Yeah, I suppose there's two ways to look at it, that's for sure. There's the point of the manufacturer. WRC2 Pro is for manufacturer-supported entries. Now, the DG Sport thing confuses me a little bit, but he's technically a manufacturer-supported entrance, and it's for the manufacturers to win WRC2 manufacturer title. So for that, it makes sense to me. But the way I was pitched WRC2 Pro in the beginning was about giving a bit more spotlight for the next generation WRC drivers, which for me, Mads isn't.
Yeah,
he's been a WRC driver for a long time. So for that reason, it confuses me a little bit. But at the end of the day, the regulation states it's manufacturer supported entries, and for me, I like to have him there. He'll be good to drive against. He'll be good to compete against, and it's a good benchmark for me to see where I'm good and where I need to improve more.
Good man. Right, Mr. Greensmith, I think I've took up more than enough of your time. I'll let you enjoy the rest of your day off before you're back to work. What is now back to work before Sweden? What are we doing before Sweden?
Multiple hours of video work, lots of training, and hopefully getting rid of this flu.
Man flu. Terrible thing.
Yeah, that's the one. That's what Jessica keeps telling me as well. Just man flu.
Good man. Listen, Gus, congratulations again, mate. It was a mega result. Incredibly proud. And we will get you back because, of course, you're our man in WRC2 and WRC2 Pro now. So you go and get yourself better, mate. And we'll catch you up soon.
Brilliant. Good to speak to you.
Thanks a lot. Gus Greensmith, thank you for joining us, Absolute Rally. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. I did say it was going to be a really busy one. Gus was good value there at the top of the programme, obviously off the back of his success in an R5 car, obviously coming from the DMAC Drive Trophy originally and then progressing into the R5 car, cracking results on Monte Carlo. Another man that went through that and went a slightly different route then was John Armstrong, friend of the show, and we've got John with us this week. Hello, John.
Hello, Tony. Nice to be back on the show.
It's good to have you back, mate. It's you know what? It's good to have you back because we're going to talk and listen, we're going to talk dirt. And what I mean is dirt rally, obviously, 2.0. But we're also going to talk about the fact that you're back in a rally car this coming weekend on what looks to be possibly one of the best entries I think I've seen for a long, long time for R5 cars over your part of the world.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to see the amount of talent that's going out and doing the rally. You know, there's lots of really, really good guys, and probably the crop of the talent that we've seen in Ireland for the last maybe 10 or 15 years, maybe bar Keith Crone doing it. So there's plenty of people for me to race and compare myself against. So really looking forward to it. And yeah, it's nice to be on chatting about doing rail rallying. So yeah.
The last time you drove an R5 car, you know, in competition was Germany 18 months ago?
It was Spain.
Spain, sorry.
15 months ago. So, yeah, it's been quite a while since the last stage in Rally Spain. And I haven't really done much driving in real life since. I've done, I think, one test day, which I didn't do much driving at, with a guy who owns an R5. And then the next time I drove a rally car was last week at Phil Price Rally School. So I'm probably going to be a little bit rusty, but I've got a test beforehand, and hopefully, you know, keeping in with the sim racing, it's kept my brain going, and hopefully I'll be able to feel what the car is doing on the test very quickly, and then hopefully I'll not be too rusty on the first stage come the rally.
Obviously, this is where your worlds have collided a little bit, because you're going to be running, obviously, the dirt livery and everything else. It must be like all your dreams in one little package, which is a Fiesta shape.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's quite funny because I talk about this quite a lot whenever I'm doing the press events for all the sort of pre-release press events that we're doing. So I always say, you know, I've been playing, especially, you know, the Colin McRae series, whenever I was 5 years old, that's when I sort of started playing video games. And I've been playing them ever since then. And yeah, it's quite funny to be working here now. This is my job, working in Codemasters, developing Dirt Rally 2.0. And, you know, to be representing them in a real life rally car, it's just, it's quite surreal, really. So it's nice to see, you know, whenever you're faced by a wall as such, if you take a different path, like I did last year with the esports and become the champion in that, as well as getting a dream job at Codemasters, and then just helping them develop the game, make it as realistic as we can with Ryan's help as well. So it's been an interesting 12 months, and it's looking better for the future now.
You mentioned obviously the launch, and I did see some of the videos where you were doing some. And I know Phil Price is quite well, to be honest with you, so it was quite interesting to watch. I used to test there a hell of a lot, so I know the venue really, really well. And I seen some of the guys, obviously that you strapped in from Cobourg, you strapped the boss in. Was that the first time they'd actually been in a rally car?
Yeah, I believe so. I think Ross Spetzer, who's our chief game designer, he didn't have much previous experience of sitting in a real-life rally car, apart from, I think he said he'd done something at Silverstone Rally School, so he'd basically no knowledge of what it was like to be chucked down a stage at 90 mile an hour. So, yeah, I think he was actually sick in his mouth after the first jump.
Oh, love it. Can I ask, did you run anti-clockwise or clockwise round Phil Price's? Because, as I say, there is a distinct difference for speed.
Well, I'd done the upper half and I'd never been there before, so probably can't really describe it too well, but we started off in the little test arena where you can get a car and then went up the steep hill, went right, and you go over the little jump.
Yeah, I know it.
And then coming up that way and come back down and then went up the big long straight, and I think you're reaching about 90 mile an hour up there. And it was super fun, really interesting to take the journalists out and try and scare them as much as I could, but it was difficult because they were trying to interview me at the same time, so it's something a bit unique, trying to think of a answer for their questions while you're trying to focus on where you're going.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is make yourself look silly in those situations as well, isn't it? It's the last thing you can do without.
Yeah, but it was really good because it's them sort of events that really triggers in their mind sort of how realistic the game has become, because they get to try the game, they get to try and drive a rally car, and then they get to go out with someone of more experience and go out in a proper stage and see what it's all about. So, yeah, it was really interesting. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it, and the games went down fantastic so far. So we're really, really looking forward to the public getting their hands on it now.
We can't wait, honestly. It's last time, because obviously we did some stuff with Dirt 4 as well, so we had a little bit of a competition between Jack Ryan and myself. We all got a copy of it, and they never told me their stage times, funnily enough. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
You must have beat them, Tony.
I'm not one for bragging, John. I don't like to talk about it. Esports champion in waiting, that's all I'm going to say. Listen, if I can take you to Galway, obviously you're in an R5 Fiesta and everything else. You've got delivery. You've got everything. What are your hopes and aspirations, John, for this coming weekend? What are we trying to achieve, do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure perhaps on me because I've had some good speed in the past, but it's still only my third event in a car of that kind on tarmac. So I'm still very much in the learning stage of that formula. You know, whenever I finished in Spain, I was kind of only really still figuring out the quickest way to drive them cars. And I'd done maybe 2 or 3 years in R2 before that, so pretty much mastered it at the end, but in R5 there's still so much I have to learn, so much potential, so much more speed to gain. So it's gonna be interesting. You know, there's a lot of quick guys going. Craig Green's been in the WRC full time for the last couple of seasons, so it's gonna be interesting to race him. And yeah, I just wanna get a good test, get a good feeling in the car, and then just have a good clean rally, push as fast as we can, and if we're comfortable, hopefully the times will come.
Is there more to come after this, John? Is there other events? I know that sounds like, of course, you want there to be other events, but there's no more events resting on this one. And what I mean is, you can actually just go out, relax, and let the times come and see what will be. There's nobody saying, right, well, if you do this, you'll get this and everything else.
Yeah, well, I guess in one sense there's been no offer on the table, and or there's been no pressure to get a result. But obviously, if we do put in a good result, it's only going to strengthen my future, and you know, hopefully it'll help me get more rallies in the future as well. So definitely want to put in a good result. I want to impress, and yeah, I want to go as fast as I can. But yeah, I want to do more events in the future, and that's something that I'm working towards. This is very much a one-off at the moment, but I think it's a good stepping stone for the future. Hopefully we can get more rallies under our belts and Well, obviously, I've talked about working with Trevor, and him, he's been giving me advice on a plan for the future and hopefully working my way back into the WRC again so we can race really quick guys like us on the world stage again.
Yeah, no, good for you. There was one man who was slightly disappointed it wasn't a two-car team, I think, last week. Jack Bengen brought it up, and Ryan Champion strategically danced around the subject, but I'm no doubt he would like to be in an R5 as well, but nevertheless, he's going to be out in the Beamer this coming weekend. He'll be doing big skids. He'll be having a ball. He'll be having a ball. But there you go. There you go. Listen, John, it's been great to get you on. As I say, we just wanted to kind of touch base here, obviously, with what's going on with dirt and obviously this coming weekend and the fact that you're doing Galway. You've not done Galway before, have you?
I've done it in 2017, I think it was. And it was with the R2T National car, so it was the one that M Sport were trying to promote to try and get the cup going. So it was a little bit underpowered than a normal R2 car, but it's a great cup car, and we had a lot of fun showing what it could do in Galway. So I think the stages of the Friday that year are the same as what we're using, so I'll have a rough idea of where I'm going and rough idea of the landscape, so hopefully that'll help me as well. And yeah, just try and get a good recce as well. You know, I'm not long out of doing everything. You have to sort of get back into the flow of making pace notes, recce, and then obviously doing a test and setting up the car, and then going out and doing the rally. So yeah, it's gonna be a fun weekend, and we're having a camera crew following us around to sort of document the whole thing as well, so we can put it out on the dirt socials and everyone can see the preparation and how the rally weekend unfolds.
Brilliant. You know what, John, I'm so pleased for you. Enjoy it. Aside from everything else, just go and enjoy it, my friend.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Good man. Listen, we'll check in with you soon, and best of luck for the weekend.
Yeah, cheers, Tony. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Folks, and you can follow the results if you Google Galway International Rally 2019. The results service is always, always excellent on the Irish tarmac. So there you go. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally. Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. As I say, a little bit of a Monte Carlo fest, albeit a week later, but some people were away testing and getting cold and going very, very quick in World Rally cars. And we've got one of them today. We've got Seb Marshall joining us. Like you said, though, Seb, everyone knew you were coming up this week anyway.
Yeah, I was listening to the podcast on my way back from our Sweden pre-event test and heard that I was on the show, so I figured I'd better put in an appearance, really.
Right, before we get to Monte Carlo, you did your test on Sweden last week. Now, first time you've been on snow and ice, of course, or certainly snow of that level with the Toyota and with Chris. How was the test?
It was good, yeah. So obviously, Chris had driven the Toyota on the Finnish gravel roads just after he'd announced his contract last year, but I wasn't with him then, so it was my first time in the car on the loose. And 3-day test for us. Each day slightly different kind of road, which really helped with sort of finding the setup. As you've seen, you know, the last sort of year, really, the car's very impressive. It's a strong package all round, and jumped in the car, and within a couple of hours of, you know, tuning the usual bits, whether it's suspension, springs, diff maps, this kind of stuff, we found something that was already pretty happy with. So yeah, it made for a really promising test. You know, just it's just as we had in Monte Carlo, it's just a case of getting that good feeling with the car, which we seem to arrive at after testing. So yeah, fingers crossed we can translate that into the speed on the rally.
If I can ask you about Monty, obviously there was this wheel failure and we talked about it a little bit on the podcast last week. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
So obviously there's a couple of, we had a puncture on shakedown and then one on stage two and stage, which one was it? Stage seven, I think it was. And Oit Tanak also has suffered a similar issue, basically all caused by something in the wheel rim that was causing the tyre to deflate. I'll be honest, I'm not an engineer. And being new to the team, I wasn't going to go digging around too much. But they tell us they've identified what the problem was, and I'm sure it won't happen again. So yeah, it's just a case of frustrating at the time, but ultimately it didn't put too much of a dampener on our weekend.
No, absolutely. What a way to start, Monte Carlo. Now, I was trying to think, and if I was really lazy, or rather, I am really lazy, if I would have probably looked at this, but I thought I'd ask you about it. When was the last time you started a full WRC season?
And the answer is never.
And that's what I thought, because I kind of went back through your career, where obviously part program with Hayden, part program with Kevin Abering, and then I was going back to like the days of when you sat with Harry Hunt and people like that. I was thinking, well, did he do a full season with them? And I know EWRC probably could have gave me all those answers, but I thought I'd ask you about it anyway.
Yes, I mean, that was kind of one of the things that when I was speaking with Chris towards the end of last year and, you know, discussing whether it might be an idea to work together, when he said, you know, he's got a full program, and that's something that I've been working towards for, you know, however long I've been in the sport, 10 years at WRC level, 15 years competing. I've never done the full program, so it was a big draw for me, and obviously it's something that I'm really excited about. And so because of that, it was also my first Monte Carlo, which I've been there eight or nine years previous to this year, doing gravel notes, coordinating, you name it, every job except sitting in the car. So yeah, it was an exciting way to start. And now that you sat here thinking, right, well, we've got round one under our belts and there's still 13 to go. Often, yeah, in the past, I've been like, oh, okay, I've got two rallies now where we're benched or whatever and sitting out. So to kind of have that opportunity to do all of them, to maintain that momentum is, really, really exciting.
How is it going into, I know we've got all the rally teams have a very European feel, of course they do, but you've obviously, you were a long time at Hyundai, you've now got into Toyota, but Toyota, Gazoo and obviously Tommy Mäkinen, there's a lot of Brits in there as well. Is there a massive difference, Seb?
It's kind of difficult to say exactly at the moment. I mean, obviously, I'm still meeting lots of new people each time, whether it's going to this test, there's faces I've not seen before. So it'll take me a bit of time to sort of settle in fully. It's nice that there's some familiar faces from people I've worked with in the past, whether that's at Hyundai or various other sort of other teams. But generally the vibe is very sort of very friendly. Everyone's very welcoming, but you can see at the same time that there's incredible determination to keep the momentum going, really, and keep the ball rolling after having secured the manufacturer's title last year. Relatively speaking, you know, getting that amount of success so early in the program, you could think, oh, they'll rest on their laurels, but all I've seen is really still pushing like a huge amount to maintain that level of performance. And it's thus far, it's a nice place to work.
Does having a four-time world champion as your boss, when he kind of says something, does that kind of, do you question it less, I guess, is the question? Is it one of them where you go, well, Tommy's kind of been there and seen it, done it. He must have a point, or he must have an idea.
I think that's perhaps one of the things. You look at the last few years, and obviously Malcolm's achieved his great success, the last couple of years with the titles with Seb and the manufacturers, and obviously Tommy winning the manufacturers last year. They're two guys that they've been there, they've seen it, they've got the t-shirt, you know, to use the cliche, and they kind of understand the sport and where the driver's coming at when he's, you know, might be struggling with something or got an idea on something. And I think it does help in terms of, that understanding. They've probably been in every situation imaginable in WRC, and so they can either, you know, give you some words of advice or be a bit of a, you know, sounding board for something. And it's just it's a very useful person to have as a leader, really, and as your sort of go-to man at the head of the team. And I think it shows in many ways that the level of success that they have achieved.
And he's also the man that's got to manage three drivers, dare I say, that have been lead drivers at other teams in the past.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's probably one of the fastest teams there is, really, that's been assembled in recent years. And look, I mean, I think you'll soon see, like, each event tends to pan out in a natural way. And we're all, as Chris has said, I think at Autosport Show, you know, we're all, you know, mature enough and grown up enough to handle the speed in amongst the drivers in a proper professional way. And I don't think Tommy will need to have too many words. I think we're all sort of fairly clever. But yeah, to be honest, I mean, talking about it like that, it's like, we'll think, wow, what a nice situation to be in when you've got three drivers who are all capable of winning.
It is an incredible team, and dare I say, it's probably possibly one of the strongest ever across the board WRC teams, because there isn't that natural, there's always been historically that natural number two, or somebody that's brought budget, or yada 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 yada. You know, this is three drivers who have got WRC wins between them and have all been lead drivers before. It must be an exciting concept for you. As I say, you've 10 years in WRC, 5 years obviously prior to that. Obviously, I know all about your career. We've known each other a long time. So 15 years, and here you are now in the best team in the world with if not the fastest driver in the world as well.
It sounds a bit surreal, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
I still have to pinch myself sometimes. You think, wow, okay, yeah, to have got to this point is a bit mad, really. I always, you know, when I was growing up, even before I'd ever started competing, just watching the sport as a fan, you kind of think, wow, that's really cool. But to have kind of got to this position is, it sounds a bit dark to say I never even dreamt that I could get this far, because it always just seemed like such a long way off. But I guess as you sort of go up the next step, the ladder, the next step, it kind of, new expectations perhaps go in line with that. And yeah, it's a nice place to be, but at the same time, now obviously having got to that point of being able to do the full program, the full championship, you now think, oh right, well, what's the next target? So I guess you're never satisfied, are you? But at the same time, it's a great place to be.
So are you and Chris having cycle races now? Because obviously this is to be Chris cycles, you cycle. I know there's a bit of a thing there. Has any challenges been set?
We've not laid down the challenge yet, but there was a funny point actually midway through last year. I went out to visit Scott and Craig, who obviously live in Andorra as well. And we were doing a big event out there, but a couple of days before, we went out with Chris as well and a few other friends just to go up the local climb, about 10-kilometer climb. I thought, all right, okay. My gears were playing up, which was my excuse.
Yes, driver's excuses straight away. You're a co-driver.
Exactly.
Where did that come from?
But I thought, well, okay, that means I can only go at one speed, so I'll just sit at that speed and see what happens. And about halfway, about 4K, and we turned around, oh, a few people had dropped off, got to 5K, and thought, Chris knows this road. And I said to him, oh, how far is there to go? And he said, 5K. I nearly fell off. But by the time we got to the top, it was just me and him that were kind of left duking it out. I was like, all right, okay, that was good fun. Challenge number one completed. So, yeah, round two coming up, I think.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's obviously, that all adds to, of course, is adding to the atmosphere in the car, because, you know, getting put together with somebody is a big deal, isn't it? And obviously, you know, Chris had been with Paul for such a long time, and they were big shoes to fill, really, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I've known Chris within the sport for the best part of 10 years. We were working out the other day. We were teammates a long, long time ago, when Chris had just won the IRC title. I joined Kronos for Rally Scotland with Adam Gould.
And, oh yeah, okay, wow.
It didn't last so long for us with mechanical issues, but yeah, so that was the first time we were teammates, I guess, way back in 2009. But yeah, like you say, it's kind of, you spend so much time with driver and co-driver together throughout the year that it's important you do get on. And it certainly makes the longer road sections a bit more bearable if you can have a bit of a chat. And yeah, just kind of, like you said, of course, Chris has worked with Paul for a long, long time, and I've, you know, worked with a variety of different drivers. So the start of a new partnership is always sort of working out exactly how each other works, both from a kind of in a professional capacity and a social capacity as well. But no, everything so far, we've, you know, been working behind the scenes now for a couple of months, and it's all got off to a good start, which is always nice.
Fantastic. We've got one last question, Seb, because we, believe it or not, these have been questions. I know I kind of masquerade behind conversation, to be honest with you, but
you make it feel very relaxed.
Thanks,
it's like you're chatting to a friend, isn't it, rather than being grilled.
I try to. But we've got from a listener called Jack Bengen, who sent in a question saying, "Can you please ask Seb how he looks so handsome even when under pressure?" and that's from Jack Bengen, age 24 3/4, I think it is now.
I'd say, well, at what point was I under pressure to have my picture taken?
And there you go. There's the answer. You were never under pressure. So there you go. So no, I put it out to the boys this morning saying, well, I'm going to be speaking to Seb, and of course, all the different pieces come in. But that was the only proper question. It was how you look so handsome. There you go, Seb. Right. Seb Marshall, thank you for joining us, because I know we've kept you from having your lunch.
So, well, at least Jack will be pleased to know I'm not doing DIY today. So no, yeah.
There's no fences that need painting.
No, it's not the season for that, really, is it? It's just that you've torn me away from writing Sweden and Mexico pace notes as well. So get busy with the paperwork. All good. Yeah,
plenty of coffee. There you
exactly.
go. All right. Well, listen, Seb, thanks so much for joining us on Absolute Rally this week, and we'll catch you up a bit later in the season.
Thanks, Tony. Cheers.
This is Absolute Rally.
Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. You've probably figured out now, if I'm talking about the final section, the rest of the boys are not appearing this week. That's very true. Through various time travel, or rather international time and everything else, we're all in different places at different times, and it was really difficult to get everybody together this week. But I hope you'd agree, it's a cracking podcast, not because I'm just on it on my own, just quality of guests this week. And We've kept the quality up right till the end. And we've got our man in JWRC joining us again for this season. Tom Williams, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hello, everyone.
It's good to have you back, Tom. Obviously, the announcement's gone out now. You are following on from your learning year, by your own admission last year, to go into JWRC for a second season. And in the exciting new, can we call it a Mark 8 Fiesta? I don't know where we're up to with marks these days, but certainly the new.
Yeah, it took me a while to realise what to call it, but yeah, it's the complete new shape Fiesta.
Yeah, which looks a cracking bit of kit. I've heard some fantastic things about it, that it's possibly one of the most advanced R2s out there. We've just been talking about this before we started. You've drove every evolution of that particular kind of shape Fiesta, all the way back to the R1 up to the current one. How does the current one stack up to obviously its predecessors?
Yeah, I think it was just the timing of how we did it, the fact that it started in the R1 Fiesta, just to learn how to, it was like almost group N, just to learn on gravel. And then we went into the older shape 1600 R2, and then every year I've gone in, the Fiesta's changed. So this year at the moment, it's the Mark 8 Fiesta, which is a complete brand new shape. Everything's new about it. And last year I drove the old evolution of the R2T, which was the first three-cylinder turbo rally car, which was a really big step. It was so different. It was a lot of experimenting, I think. And this one, the Mark 8, is the second evolution, and it's a really, really big step forward. It's one of the best cars I've driven. It's really, really enjoyable.
It looks purposeful, I think, is the way. Obviously, you know, those images that M Sport quite rightly put out, it looks purposeful. It looks like it's got the right stance and everything. It looks like a proper little rally car, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. When I talked to Maciek, he said, I want a car to win R2.
Yeah.
And I, after testing it, the only way I could describe it is like a front wheel drive R5 car.
Yeah, and which is amazing. But just we've come full circle here as well, by the way, because Gus obviously is at the beginning of the podcast with me, and I put him up as a little bit of a poster boy because he started off in R1 exactly like you just described, and ironically in the same car as you. It was actually the same R1 car that you started in. Yeah. Was Gus's old car. So there you go. It's a good way to finish the podcast this week. But just with regards to the R1 car and that kind of, was it a conscious thing to kind of stay with M Sport and kind of have that ladder of working your way up, and I suppose getting to know people at M Sport as well rather than hopping around other manufacturers?
Well, I remember it really well, and I think it was a Welsh rally and the British Championship, and I think Gus was in he was doing the British Championship in an R2T, and he was using the R1 as a recce car, and that's when he changed hands the car to us, and that's when I started using it. But it's just there's no reason to change. They've got the complete ladder, they've got all the equipment, all the cars. And it's a lot easier to run as a custom. You can run it as a private team, so there's no reason to change all the R2 cars. There's not that much difference. It's more about the driver. So we thought there's no reason to change, and they were doing a good job.
Good for you. Good for you. Now, obviously, we've just said you are going back to JWRC this year. You've already done an event on snow and ice this year, same weekend as the Monty. You did the Arctic Rally, which is, it's got a little bit of history with it, Arctic Rally. I always remember it being around that people were going, people like Tony Jardine, of course, the F1 pundit and stuff. I always remember Tony doing that a particular event and various others who would use it as a warm-up for Sweden. Obviously, things have changed now and calendars have moved around. How did the Arctic Rally come about for you?
Yeah, well, I came across it from just a few people, and especially my co-driver, Phil, because he's done it before with one of the Japanese Toyota drivers, and lots of different other people are saying it's an event to do because it's so extreme, which I can say it was, being below minus 30. But it was really, really interesting because there's all sorts of ex-F1 drivers and current or Bottas being there. Yeah, it was definitely an experience, but really good.
Did you manage to get, obviously, unfortunately, it was a mechanical for you, but did you learn much? Because it was in the older spec car, wasn't it? It wasn't in one of the new cars.
Yeah. I really, really, really got me back into the rhythm after not driving for a while, especially on ice. And there's also how everyone says how quick Sweden is, but that Arctic Rally is a lot quicker and a lot colder. So it kind of puts you right in the deep end. So when I come back to Sweden, it feels a bit more normal.
Fair play.
So, Arctic is something else because we had a mechanical because it was just so cold, and a lot of the plastic in the engine bay, it starts to crack every time we went over. Every time we hit a bump, you just hear a crack, and you could see around the engine bay. There's lots of cracks of hearing.
Wow.
The inlet manifold kind of folded in.
Wow, scary, isn't it? Scary. Yeah. But you've got Finland, you've got Sweden, and they said Finland then, but you've got Sweden. There is a slight change, isn't there, to the JWRC calendar for this year, if you just want to take our listeners through your little journey this year, Tom?
Yeah, so there's five rounds of the JWRC, starting off with Sweden, which we did last year, and it's identical route. And then the following rally will be to Tarmac, Corsica, which was the same as last year, but the routes all changed now and completely different, which is good for us because a lot of the other drivers are very experienced over there. And then after that, we go to Sardinia, which I've never been to before. Everyone says that's a really good event, and I don't think it's as rough as Portugal because in the smaller junior cars, they really, really, really get battered, especially like Turkey. And then after Sardinia, it'll go to Finland, which is it's always been there, and especially in the junior cars, they go well. It's smooth and fast, and it's one of my favorite events. I'm really, really looking forward to that one. And then instead of Turkey, compared to last year, it's finishing on GB, which is our home round, which is really in favor of us. That's really good for me. And
you went well last year. You went really well there last year.
Well, it'll be a lot easier for me for an event I've done before than Turkey or the other events that really it's just so different. So it's nice to do a familiar event.
Do you know what, talking about events, and as I'm speaking to you, obviously it's a relatively short career so far, but I can remember, obviously we didn't know each other at this point, but there's various people who sat with you, and one of the lads who sat with you all the way back in 2015, I used to work with as an instructor, like called Rob Gillam. So I remember you doing juniors back then. Now, you're going back to, you know, the Nissan Micra, you know, you're doing single venues and stuff like that. Can you remember back at that point, Tom? And, you know, I spoke to, it's funny enough, I spoke to Gus about this as well, again, at the top of the podcast. There is some similarity. Can you remember the aspiration that you had back in those days to where we are? It's only 4 years ago, really, but I guess it's must be like a lifetime ago for you now, really.
Yeah, it really, really, really feels like a long time ago now, but it wasn't that long. All I remember when we turned up, we didn't really know how to do it or how to get into rallying. And at that point, there wasn't any aspiration. It was just to drive the rally cars and literally just be able to drive the cars, which was the enjoyment out of it, just to drive any rally car. So having that championship for the juniors, it was really nice because it was so tight and there was so many, the competition was so good. And it was a nice atmosphere. We could all really have a good race together. So I really enjoyed that year. And then that's moved forward into all the adult rallying, which just got even more competitive and there's deeper learning curve.
Just slightly more expensive than the Nissan Micra as well.
There I add.
But this year, Tom, with the new car, obviously you've drove it now. You've got some new people to race, to use that term as well, this year. Do you know a lot about the competition going into JWRC this year?
Yeah, the competition this year, all I know is a lot more than last year. Every year since I started the juniors, the competition has just been relentless. And this year, since a lot of people weren't sure last year about the championship, and now it's its second year, everybody's kind of turned up, and there's, I think, just champions from every single country, and there's some really, really quick guys, which is what we want. We want the highest competition because we'll learn the most from them.
Do you feel, obviously, last year you obviously did some time over on the frozen lakes and stuff like that. This year, your preparation's slightly different, but you've been out doing a rally. Are you feeling good going into Sweden? Bear in mind, okay, you had issues on the Antarctic rally, but you got mileage, as you said before, and you've got seat time and things like that. Going into Sweden, obviously, I think you have a test, don't you, before the rally, I think, on the Thursday.
I already did the test. There was a M Sport test in Norway with the new shaped car on ice.
Okay.
So that's definitely boosted my confidence. It's a lot. I feel a lot happier going in Sweden for the second year round. Last year was very a bit nerve wracking, just driving on ice for the first time. So this year's I feel a lot more confident, and after a good test, and we're happy with my pace notes, I feel we'll just drive the best we can.
Obviously, do you see the value of doing the rally as opposed to, you know, just the stuff on frozen lakes? Because, you know, a lot of experienced guys, obviously, we talked about this before we started recording, but you look at some of the top guys in WRC2 going into Sweden, and they did the second round of the Norwegian Rally Championship last weekend. You know, Jonas Andersen and Mads Osberg, Christian OVB, Henning Solberg, Emil Brid Nielsen. You know, these are all guys that are going to be at the top of the game in Sweden, and they took an event on purposely to get ready for that, as opposed to just testing.
Yeah, I think the test we did was more productive than a rally, because you can focus on what you need. It was not so pressurized, so you can focus on the detail of the setup and going back and change. You can go back, and for when you're on a rally, it's good for getting used to the pressure and competition. It's not as easy to quickly change setup, springs, height. So I found I got a lot more out of the test than the event. But both wise, it's always good seat time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, Tom. Well, we better let you get back to preparation for Sweden. I'm guessing Phil must be busy now. We had Seb Marshall on earlier on, and he was getting paperwork ready for Sweden. I'm guessing that's what Phil's doing at the moment. What are you doing to prepare?
Yeah, there's endless paperwork for Phil, I can imagine. Well, I know. And And me at the moment is just endless in-car and training, a lot more fitness this year, and preparation in all areas.
What's changed in your training, Tom? This is something I've always been fascinated in. Obviously, you said a lot more training. What have you changed? Is it more cardio-based? Is it more weight-based? What have you changed from last year?
Weight-based I do less of. I do a lot more cardio because the cars are so... Unless your power steering goes wrong, I might regret this, but I do a lot more cardio now just because of the stages. You just lose so much body fluid sweating. I just find cardio all the time now, and that's my main focus.
Is it running, cycling? What are you doing?
I do a lot of running, and I do a little bit of cycling, but I prefer running because you can just do it anywhere, and there's no equipment. You can just do it on the go all the time.
Yeah, good for you. Right, well, you go and get your running shoes on, and we'll wrap up this podcast this week. But you're going to be our boy again in JWRC this year, so you'll be checking in with us and giving us event reports and everything throughout the year, which is fantastic. Folks, that is the end of the podcast for this week. As I say, I have been home alone. I have literally been home alone. Apart from the fact we've had some fantastic guests. There's been no Trev, there's been no Jack, there's been no Ryan. So they've had a week off. They will be back next week with me in some capacity or another. But we do appreciate your love. We do appreciate the guys that have contributed to charities and have been sending screen grabs for the Absolute Rally and We Terrors mugs, of course, sponsored by Kielder. It's been a fantastic podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been great bringing you so many guests, and we will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.